Sexy in Van City may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR. Welcome to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. Or maybe you could be one of our podcast listeners. However you've decided to spend the hour with us, we are very, very glad to have you. My beautiful listeners out there, how many of you have had a long-distance relationship or gone to another country and fell in love with somebody, and you've loved them so much that you don't want it to be just a fling? You actually consider perhaps moving to another country. Perhaps you consider falling in love and getting married and taking it to the next steps. If that's something that has something that you've gone through, considered sponsoring somebody perhaps to come to your country that you're living in, or anything like that in terms of relational things, you might want to tune in tonight, because I've got a lovely, 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 talented writer on the show tonight who has a lovely book and is actually fundraising for her latest upcoming book. But tonight we're going to be talking a lot about different things. The lovely Linny Von Sky is going to be talking about Our Canadian Love Story, which is about her and her husband indirectly, about some of the research. But it's also a children's book, which is super cool, which the illustrations are by Rebecca Wright. As well as that, she is in the midst of a really cool Indiegogo campaign right now for her next upcoming book, which is pretty cool, where it is about bullying. And before you think, oh no, another bullying story, it's actually pretty cool because it's actually about weight bullying, which is something that we don't really hear about. We hear a lot about many different types, but not about weight bullying. So it's going to be really neat. So we will be touching about that as well, and just how that affects self-esteem and relationships later on. And if you do want to check out her campaign that she's got going on right now, I'm just going to welcome Linny to the show and just have her right off the bat just plug, because you've already raised $14,000. But this being an Indiegogo, you need to raise another $6,000 so that you can keep the money that you've already raised. Is that correct? So you can publish the next book.
That's correct. Thank you for having me on the show. First, let's start there.
Thank you.
Oh, you have a good radio voice. Yeah, you do. We currently have our second Indiegogo campaign running, and as it goes with these crowdfunders, you always need a lot of support, and you can't do it by yourself. So we have 10 more days to do it. Indiegogo, type in pom pom, and you'll find pom pom. Our flightless bully tale.
No, I think that sounds awesome. So you mentioned this is your second Indiegogo. So did you do an Indiegogo campaign as well for your first book? Or
Yes, we did.
Okay.
We bravely did. We had absolutely no idea what we were getting into.
Wow.
But yes, I mean, I originally wrote the first story on 3 Air Canada puke bags on a flight. Who knew that that would ever turn into a book? It was more of a party trick in the beginning. But curiously enough, people loved the story, and we just felt like it needed to be made. So we plugged it on Indiegogo, and 3.5 weeks later, we had $11,043 in the bank, which didn't end up being enough, but
that's a lot in three weeks.
Yeah, it was. It was overwhelmingly successful, and it's been quite the ride since.
That's awesome. In terms of, you mentioned the puke bags, the flights, and the fact that at the beginning it was kind of more of a just for fun that you wrote it, as opposed to seeing it fully fleshed out, where I'm looking right now where I've got a nice hardcover book in front of me that's called Our Canadian Love Story. So
yeah, it's sometimes you have these strange little dreams, and probably writing or having a book that has my name on it was always in my pages, but the fact that it actually happened still to me is completely unreal. So I still feel like I'm a little bit of an imposter almost. But it's been incredible, and it's probably what saved my love story. Because this project, and I'll call it just that because that's what it was. It was a little project, something that was a happy space to my husband and I, it was right in the midst of his immigration to Canada.
Okay.
So, you know, we went through all the trauma of him not being able to work, him having to quit his job after a working holiday visa, and all of a sudden all this power resting on my end of the bargain, where I was providing for us and I was going to UBC, and he was here in body and spirit, but he just couldn't contribute in any sort of way just because Canada didn't really permit that. There was no no place for that in the law to allow him that. So that was an interesting little shift in power for any sort of relationship.
Very much so. I know we've got a mutual friend who's female, who's a female who has just spent going through the same thing.
Amanda, yes.
Mm-hmm. Which, if you're listening, Amanda, we love you.
We do.
And just the challenges as well, where she's a very independent woman and all of a sudden reliant on her husband for the last couple of years, which finally her papers have come through and she's excited because she can work. So, but it's just that challenge. And as well, just the choices about choosing to sponsor someone as well, because you're legally responsible for anything, like their medical, everything.
Really, anything and all of it. Yes. No, absolutely. And I mean, there's only so much that the law can take care of.
Okay.
The law doesn't live in your bedroom, in your morning conversations, and in your relationship. So it's a really fine line, and it takes a whole lot of love to make that process work. Because all of a sudden you're dealing with things that just aren't very romantic or sexy, really.
Well, I think just even the word law, which when you think of bylaws, etc., it's very dry. And I think when people think of falling in love and getting married, even though essentially a marriage document is a binding contract, let alone when you take it to the next level and for immigration as well to a different country, there's so much different stuff that needing to shift. And, you know, when we want to just focus on love and marriage, it's, you know, or just love, period, sometimes it's hard. And I think as well, especially just coming out of, I'd like to think that we're coming out of our recession right now as well, but since 2009, there's been a lot of layoffs, etc., where many two-income families have had to become one income. So it's been very, very challenging where it affects the person who's having to rely on the other's other partner. It affects their self-esteem. Sometimes because of that, it can affect their libido, which of course is a lovely domino effect. Where
oh, and my husband would love me talking about that. Let's talk about that now. but no, I mean, it's the truth. I mean, it really, anybody who comes into that situation, you know, and whether it's the Amandas or the Nicholases of the world, it's tough times when
it
you
is.
Just sort of rest your case into somebody's arms more so than you may have initially bargained for.
Yeah, and that's it. It's also hard on the other end too, like in terms of when you, even though you make a choice to support somebody because of love, it's sometimes hard because
it's just a very vulnerable place.
It is,
you know, and in that vulnerable place, you have to. I think I've never learned gentle. Or being gentle the way that I did during that time, because he trusted me with so much that he entrusted me with so much that I had to just take care of that. I had to protect that trust and, you know, oftentimes couldn't let my emotions fly the way that I naturally would have. And I don't mean that in a sexual way, but simply simply being very respectful of that power shift and the power that I held over him, quite literally, because, you know, it was contingent on him being able to stay in the country or not. And I'm an immigrant myself, so I came with my parents, because my dad was a professor with McMaster University, and so I still came as a dependent. But that was such a different process, because you're used to relying on your parents and trusting them with these things. It's not the same thing.
No, not at all. So first, if someone was asking you for advice, and I know you're not a lawyer.
Not a lawyer,
but,
no.
So you cannot give legal advice on
Absolutely
this.
Absolutely not. That's a disclaimer.
But in terms of just general thoughts that somebody might want to think about if they're considering,
considering choosing to sponsor someone where they've had that discussion? And what are some thoughts to consider, like, before making that decision?
Well, having gone to UBC, having done my immigration policy, law and procedure certificate, and many of my co-students, they all went on to become immigration consultants. I think that's a great place to start. I think it's absolutely a place that you should take that discussion, because it's a discussion that's way too complex. And even if you can do a lot of the paperwork yourself, it's so important to get that opinion of somebody who knows.
Yes.
Even just as a mediator in something that's so emotional. And, you know, I mean, they strip you down. They're going to ask you questions that you may not be willing to answer, you know. I mean, in the interview, I think ours ended up being, oh, God, it was an entire file folder about, you know, whether he knew the color of my underwear to prove whether this is a genuine relationship, right?
Wow.
Because that's really what you do. And in the eyes of the law, you have to prove that this is genuine love. You're not coming here because you bought a wife in wherever, or you know, you're doing a favor to somebody who just wants to come and enjoy the privileges of living in Canada.
Wow.
You really have to make sure that you know, whether it's the amount of Skype calls that you had during the moments that you were away, love letters, you have to get references from all your best friends, your parents, the first time they met you, pictures. It's really uncomfortable.
Yes.
It's really uncomfortable.
It's like having everything under a microscope. It's like sticking everything up on Facebook, which, even though many of us tend to do that.
Absolutely, yes.
But still, usually Facebook, I always think of it more as a barbecue, in terms of if you look at your circle of influence as opposed to random strangers.
Well, and you always, you know, there it's censored, right? I mean, we choose very carefully. We craft that image
that's true.
Out there, right? I probably will not share my saddest moments on Facebook, although many people choose to. Usually that picture out there is very happy, you know, look at all the trips I'm taking, look at all, you know, so it's that kind of idea.
Yeah.
Whereas this becomes a file about, do you know each other's deepest secrets, you know, and in an interview, because it does get to the point often where you have to go and interview with CIBC officers of the law, no question is a no-go. You know, there's moments where they will show up at your place at 5 a.m. just to ring the doorbell to see who might open up. Because ideally, I mean, if you've said you're married to the guy, that's who should open the door, or yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it never went to that place. But the fact that you live under a microscope, that's a strange place to have a relationship. It really, really is. So first of all, be in love. Make sure that the relationship you're in is genuine.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have one doubt in your mind that this could be for the rest of your life, maybe move to their country. Our situation
was
unique because I'm originally from Germany, right? So I have a German passport. I'm still only quote unquote a permanent resident in Canada. So so I think not only for part of the process, not only did I have to constantly be convinced and in my heart know that I loved my husband, but also I felt myself in this strange love-hate relationship with the country that I choose to call home, right? Because I'd sort of go back and forth thinking, oh, this is absolutely worth it. It's so gorgeous. Look at, you know, I don't know, look at the ocean, look at the mountains, blah, blah. But then I'd kind of go, oh, screw this. This is the worst thing. Canada sucks. Why am I even trying this? I miss the cafes of Berlin. And, you know, so it was almost these two relationships that I was having, trying to define my place in it, which is probably why I ended up writing one of the most patriotic children's books about Canada, which is our Canadian love story, right? And it was more my little love affair with Canada that I was trying to manifest somehow by writing the story, because that became so much of a part of making this work and making me hang on to what was a very, very difficult process.
It sounds challenging. I've heard it's about 2 years where the person who's sponsored usually cannot work. And I know sometimes it can take longer, sometimes less. Mm-hmm. And I know there were challenges with, especially recently, with our mutual friends. Mm-hmm. Poor, I don't know if she wants me talking about her this much on the radio. But in regards to just some of the... just about people being on strike, et cetera. So paperwork, even though it was all in check, et cetera, it was just taking a heck of a lot longer to get through than it should.
Well, and, you know, being completely respectful of her story, my story, that's the story of so many.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other thing I would say, always seek for other people that are going through the right, through that same process,
mm-hmm.
because there will be shared emotions in there.
Yes.
And the types of emotions and the types of strange little intimacy things that come up even within relationships that are so intricate and so delicate that really only somebody who's going through the same process can relate to. And you know, it's interesting that your show is called what it is called. And now we're talking about one of the least sexiest processes in the entire universe, and that's probably immigration.
But I think in some ways, even if you think about everybody wanting happily ever after, what is that really? Marriage is a contract. And I know I sound particularly cynical saying that. But
no,
I think
that's exactly what this process reminds you of every single day.
Mm-hmm. Where it's the negotiation. And I think right now, as many of us search for love, and I know Vancouver's got a really bad reputation of being a really challenging city to date in, out of all the Canadian cities, even though we've got incredibly beautiful people, but a lot of times it's hard to get people to commit to stuff. And the amount of commitment, you've got to be willing to just jump and say, yes, I commit to loving this person, and I choose to staying here for their, you know, for my life, with, and I commit. That's a really big declaration, and having people testing and challenging that as well, and having to prove it.
Well, and that brings us to my definition of sexy, because I think so much of the process that Nicholas and I had to go through actually defined love and relationship and sexy to me, because it was unbelievably attractive that he loved me to this point where he was willing to leave a country behind, a life behind in many ways, and entirely embrace this new place with me by his side. And we were so lonely in that journey.
Mm.
And that loneliness forced so much intimacy.
Yes.
That was sometimes very extreme to deal with, but also rewarding in a way that I've never really been rewarded in. So yes, it defined trust, it defined commitment. It was the ultimate in all of that, and we were lucky and we withstood that test.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the process, we've met many, many, many couples who absolutely didn't last through that process.
Mm-hmm.
So you could just as easily find somebody who can tell you the exact opposite of my story. And there's no happy end, because that is a happy end that we have been so determined to fight for.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the beauty in our relationship is absolutely that.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that was creating a children's book and creating this weird alternate universe that we inhabited where, you know, bunnies were falling in love. Mexican mustachio bunnies were falling in love with little French bunnies. But that's what kept us laughing. It's what kept us dreaming. And sometimes it was funny to have a bunny alter ego.
So tell us, French bunnies, Mexican bunnies, and coming to Canada bunnies.
Yes.
Okay.
Both of them do. So I mean, and the book reads from two sides. So the preschoolers or all the kids that I read to when I go into schools, they always say, oh, it's a magic book. And they get terribly excited that you can read it from both sides. And the boy and the girl, they each get a cover. So it doesn't matter which way you read the book, you always end up with love in the middle. And it's been a lot of fun talking to children about something that is so obviously love. because you know, there's a lot of little open sentences that I'll leave and I'll let the kids answer how they think this continues. And wow, kids are conservative. They always think that the bunnies get married. always. They always assume that there's lots of kissing that goes on. They completely, I mean, even the first graders, they completely get why he'd be in love with her. Like, these little boys get the hots for this little bunny. It's quite adorable. there's a lot of blushing that goes on when we do our readings. but it's fun because, I mean, you know, in the end, that's what most of us search for.
Yes.
These erotic little encounters where you just, for however long any relationships might last, you know, but this rub, I mean, these two little bunnies, they eventually end up meeting at Canada International Airport. I didn't want to pick sides, so I just said Canada International Airport to get around that. It's not a West Coast, East Coast book. Kind of just, you know, that's what you get to do. You get to invent airports when you write children's books. But they run into each other and they see each other across the hallway, basically, and, you know, and they just stop and gaze, and, well, that's that. Ever since, Canada has had jackrabbits. but you know, it's you can never be too forward with these things, and I think especially when we're talking with kids, it's really fun to talk about love and relationships, because at such a young age, children are already so incredibly aware. I mean, watch young girls. Actually, go to Cuba and watch young girls. That's an interesting one.
Please share.
Well, I mean, have you ever traveled to Cuba?
Mm-mm.
Watch girls. It makes me blush. There's so much sex appeal, almost to the point where you look at a 6-year-old or a 4-year-old and being sort of infiltrated by this Western concept of, you know, oh, well, don't take everything out into the public. You look at them and you go, oh, holy, I don't know if I'll ever be that sexy. Like, these girls just are so aware of body movement and flirting, and so are the boys. They pick up on it. It's such in German we say coquetterie. I don't know if there's a word, you know, when you sort of play, it's flirtatious. It's it's incredible. And as forward as it is, there's still this beautiful raw innocence, because it's something that they do instinctively.
Yes.
It's something that they can't help. And kids tend to do that, you know. I mean, very, very, I went to a preschool, and it's all about who kissed who and who's holding hands with who. And it's beautiful to watch.
When do you think that changes?
When does that change? Well, I think boys go through a phase where they reject a lot of that and are a little unaware. But, some boys stay incredibly in tune with all of this. But girls, I mean, I can only talk about me, right? I mean, this is such a unique thing. I think I was always terribly aware of drawing the boys' eyes on me, and I've always loved that. I've always loved playing and being playful and flirting with boys and girls alike. You know, I enjoy that sensuality. And again, not necessarily in a sexual manner. I think there's something beautiful about the way that, and this always brings me back to Cuba. I mean, the way that Cubans talk with their hands and their bodies, and there's just so much there that I think we can learn a lot by going back to being children and bringing some innocence to that game.
So if we could do that, and you could wave a magic wand and basically, what would need to shift basically to keep that quality from when they're very young, where there is no sense of shame or stigma around sensuality or sexuality? What would we need to shift as a culture to support that?
Wow, that's a really laden question. I used to write a blog, which has now magically disappeared because I had one night where I erased an entire year and a half of daily blogging. Don't ever do that, regardless of how bad it is. I had a stint that was called Dr. Eye Candy for Don't Reduce Me to Eye Candy, and it dealt completely with media-dictated body images. Mm. And it was a really interesting go, and it was really a rant by me against everything that media dictated, you know, all those beauty ideals. And it came from a place of so much anger because my best friend was actually diagnosed with cancer at age 26. And I know I'm taking...
No, that's all right.
taking a little bit of an angle here, but Lena was always just this ridiculous... I mean, she was the kind of girl that you wanted to poke her and hope she kind of crumbled because that... type of beauty just was something almost unacceptable. Mm-hmm. She was the gorgeous blonde bombshell, perfect figure. Cellulite was something she had never heard of. And you know, from one day to the next, she was diagnosed, and we went through all of it. We went through 28 brain tumor surgeries over 3 years, 10 bouts of chemo, 70 sessions of radiation, all of that. And she was just stripped. And in the process, remarkably, she became so beautiful. And she said one thing to me once, and she had men hanging all over her. But, you know, she'd date the ones that had Porsches and things like that. And I said, well, why does everybody you know now stay away? And she said, well, because me, this little girl with no hair, bald, just doesn't look good in a cabriolet. And her world had become really so much about her looks.
Hmm.
And when they crumbled, the entire world crumbled around her. It devastated me. It devastated me so much that I just had to rant. And my way of ranting was in this blog. And that said, when all of this exterior Lena crumbled, what came back was this remarkable little girl who knew how to bat her non-lashed eyelashes in a way that was so charming and so innocent and so kid-like. It was heartbreaking. It was beautiful.
Wow.
It was beautiful. It was incredibly empowering to see her embrace that. And for me, it in that moment, it just defined everything that was wrong with our world.
Wow. What would you say in that definition of what's wrong with our world would we need to majorly shift? Without going through, because she, I'm sorry for your friend, and I'm glad it came to an empowered place, but just all the,
yeah,
all the pain.
Can we do that without that? Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Well, you know, I think it, for me, it comes down to embracing me.
Hmm.
Learning to find confidence in that strange place of self-confidence.
Hmm.
In that place of insignificance that we all sort of suffer from. And being a little truer than we are. I think it comes down to honesty. I think it comes down to self-expression.
Mm-hmm.
For the purpose of actually self-expressing yourself. As opposed to trying to impress somebody by doing it.
Hmm.
It comes down to doing a lot more things for yourself and making it more about yourself, not in a selfish way, but that, you know, that age-old thing, gotta love yourself before
mm-hmm.
you can love somebody else or somebody else can actually love you.
Yes.
But it's... I'm going to be 32 next week, and I think with every age that I get a little closer to being me and feeling more rested, more sensual, more okay with what I got. And I hope it's just going to keep going like that until I'm 106, old, wrinkled, and happy.
I like to think it does. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find as getting older and just taking that ownership, embracing the changes as they come, and perhaps it's because going from child to tween to teen, that journey is so quick that there's so much to adapt to. Because even a baby, it's just like those shifts are so fast. Like, look how quickly they grow out of clothing. And that's just the physical changes, let alone the physio, you know, all the other stuff that's going on emotionally, spiritually, etc. So, and as an adult, perhaps because the changes slow down, we have an opportunity to savor the journey a little bit more.
Yeah, I'd hope so. And I think another thing that we have to take out of the equation is comparison. Constant comparison. And you mentioned Facebook earlier. I mean, the amount of times in a day when you check Facebook, and, you know, most of us unfortunately do, the amount of times a day that you compare your own life or your own self to the images that are thrown at you. And now these aren't commercials. These are censored moments in the lives of people
that we know.
Who we know, right? So I mean, that's a whole new dimension of censorship, and you know, even a good Instagram filter can do a lot of Photoshop magic to any of these moments, right? So less comparison would probably do all of us some good.
Mm-hmm. No, very, very, very much so. Going full circle in regards to, you mentioned that this project, as you described, our Canadian love story, really helped hold your relationship together with your husband when you're going through the challenges of immigration, etc. What would you recommend for people who are going through, I think, just in general, any change in relationship, but especially, like, as people are considering getting more serious? And I think in terms of moving to another country for another person, that's probably one of the, personally, I think that's a bigger declaration than marriage, but...
I'd agree with you. I'd agree with you, absolutely.
But when someone is considering moving in that direction in terms of their relationship, what are some key things to really, really think about before making a decision? Because you're legally responsible for someone. But even marrying somebody, like, it's just some key thoughts in regards to what's important, like what makes this right compared to the rest of them.
Mm-hmm. For me, I mean, I think a lot of it was checking in with people who meant the world to me. You know, in my case, that happened to be my parents, my siblings. It's not that for everyone. Mm-hmm. It's not these people. But getting a reality check on this place, I mean, it's been proven many times that when you are in love, your synapses don't fire in the same way that sane people function in. And getting a reality check that you're actually doing this with somebody that may in fact be good for you. That's really important, because it's really easy to get caught up in the heat of a relationship and just thinking, I will do anything with you and I will run to the moon if I need to. Check in and make sure that it's based on merit, on all the right. Be rational about it. And that's the last thing you want to do. But be rational and see if this relationship actually holds up under that rational magnifying glass. And then the other thing, I mean, create plenty of moments of fun, because there's so much technicality in, whether it's legal technicality or just logistic technicality that's involved in moving. Create pockets where you just allow yourself to sort of float off into anything but rationality, because that also keeps it going.
Mm-hmm.
At least it did for us. You know, you need an escape from the daily hazards of of trying to figure things out mm-hmm. when you come to a new place.
I think that's a really good way to put that as well. And I think if anybody out there is listening to this and considering sponsoring someone, considering taking your relationship to the next level, I'm just going to throw a few things out there. Lenny, you've hit some really key points. Checking with people that you value. Most important, of course, is checking with yourself. Are you actually authentic with this person? And is it good for you? And really being honest with yourself in terms of what that answer is. Or are you just giving, like, as my mother used to put, you know, why buy the cow if you give, you know, if you get the milk for free?
Mama knows.
And I'm not just talking about sex here, everyone. I'm talking literally on an emotional level where sometimes just giving and not opening yourself up to receive. But really checking in there and just seeing, is this reciprocal? Is it balanced? Are our value systems the same? What do we want? Do we want, like as an example, in terms of life goals, do we want to have children? Some people do, sometimes people don't. And sometimes that doesn't get answered until 5 or 6 years into a marriage and people break up because of that shift where, and yes, people do change, but sometimes core values, it's just those conversations didn't get asked or they didn't have those before the relationship. Mm-hmm. Went into the next step. So please, please, please have those. If you are not comfortable having them, perhaps hiring a relational counselor to work through. Rebecca Staten is really lovely at Vital Health. If you're looking for somebody great, Dr. Faisal Sakuran is fabulous as well. And there are some really, really, really good people you can speak to. And if you're spiritual, sometimes a spiritual leader sometimes has relational counseling, or it's sometimes a series of weeks you sign up for where you discuss everything from who pays what bill from.
And that's important.
It is. We don't think it's important, but even think about every, especially if you're on campus and you're looking at having a different roommate every year. Yeah. People, there's different things. We can love people, but is love enough? And if the value systems, the core beliefs are not there, the actual what do you want out of life, even though that will change, and be willing to fall in love with your partner over and over and over again.
As I join you in the tent.
And just communication, making sure you have a chance to just play with that. And I'm going to throw reference books out there, but love, love, love Dr. Gary Chapman's 5 Love Languages, and really, really finding out what your partner's love languages are. And I'm going to throw this out there for anybody who's challenging in your life that you care about, but I want to make your relationship better. Just try and figure out whether it's your mother, whether or not it's your father-in-law, somebody you want to be closer to and that you respect and would like to connect with more. Sometimes figuring out what their love language is can really make a difference. So whether or not acts of service, gifts, words of acknowledgement. I can't remember the rest.
I can't think of the other two.
Quality time and physical contact. Yes. Which ironically are both mine, which is really weird that I couldn't remember that. I don't know if that's a Freudian slip or what.
Oh, no.
But those things are really important because by honoring them in the way that they need to be loved, by using those realms of communication, it can make a huge, 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 huge impact. And I think all of us are challenged with self-esteem at different times. But by being able to honor people the way they want, they can hear that you love them when you use their languages. Can be really, really, really key. And I just have to say, Lenny, I think this is super cool that, you know, like a lot of people want to write a book and say, oh, I'm going to write a book someday, but you did it. And you're on your second book right now, which is super cool. So what made it from where this was just a fun quote unquote project to an actual reality where it's like, hey, let's do an Indiegogo campaign for your first one?
Oh, wow. You know, it was one of those things that just came together in exactly the way that things that should be do come together.
Okay.
It was a very organic step. And from one to the next, you know, I mean, it was sitting at Bridges Restaurant on the patio with somebody telling me about Indiegogo. I'd never heard of crowdfunding. And a week and a half later, we just jumped into it head first. And I tend to go head first. Unfortunately, I'm not too concerned with any rocks I might hit. I worry about them later. But yeah, it was a very organic process. And looking back, I think at the speed of which it went as well, it was something that was just meant to be. It's almost, these books sort of fall out of me, and I can't help it. Other people create other things. This is my creative process, and the second one especially. I think I need to make it happen so I can call myself a repeat offender and somehow justify that term author. Maybe it'll stick. it's a beautiful process, and it's beautiful to hold something in your hands that at some point your crazy imagination thought up.
No, I think that's so cool. And in regards to the second book, I see you've got your pom-pom here, which
yes,
is super
I
cool.
Do. I've been carrying it everywhere.
I think it's awesome. Do you want to share just in regards to a little bit about it and about the weight bullying, and after hearing about your blog that you used to have, and just in regards to, even though I know your friend's story didn't have to do with weight bullying, but it does have to do with self-esteem. It just puts your book in a different perspective for me, and in a really super cool way.
Well, you know, seeing that this is a UBC station, we're in a university setting. So my father, actually, he holds the Canada Research Chair for Obesity. So there's an angle there for sure. Mm-hmm. The reason my family came to Canada was because of obesity. I was raised in a household where I probably knew too much about the scientific aspects of obesity, even though, you know, who knows? Who actually knows anything about it? It's so undiscovered still in so many ways. It's just something that's always concerned me. One of my sisters is heavy. My mother is definitely on the heavier side. It's obesity, something that's been very prevalent in my family. And luckily I have women around me who just carry it so well. I've never seen them be the target of bullying attacks. But, you know, you catch the occasional glare or the occasional comments that just hurt, and they're not directed at me, but they're directed at people who I love so dearly, that I just feel like I need to step in and put this on the table. We always talk about bullying, we always talk about so many unaccepted types of bullying, and yet weight never seems to be one of those things. You know, I think one of the most widely spread accepted prejudices is definitely weight bias and prejudice against, you know, fat jokes. I mean, they're everywhere. Try to find a sitcom where the fat guy isn't also the clumsy guy, and, well, he's the funny guy, but that's pretty much, he doesn't get sexy or any of those other terms, and it's just so accepted in our society that we don't talk about that sensitivity enough. And my concern is particularly with the heavier side, and where we could be making that exact same argument for the underweight. Mine just, you know, I worked for the Canadian Obesity Network. I was part of that discussion. It's an interesting angle for me, and it's an angle that I decided to pursue in my book.
It's neat too, because it's also in some ways a love story as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Where it's interesting in regards to love and wanting acceptance, but also our crushes, and where sometimes they don't have to crush us. And I think it's really sweet where...
Oh, you said that so adorably.
Thank you. Did you want to share with our listeners a little bit about the story and as well about the campaign?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, so this story is called Pom Pom, A Flightless Bully Tale. And our little main guy, he's a little chubby penguin. He's a macaroni penguin. And yes, they do exist. They're the ones with the funny macaroni hair. And so he's a little macaroni penguin, and he lives in Antarctica. And his friends and family, they call him Pom Pom. But it turns out he hates that. He absolutely hates the fact that they call him that, because they say he looks like a pom-pom. And he would much prefer if they'd call him by his real name, which is Pomeroy Paulus Jr. III. And, of course, this little boy, he has, or this little penguin, I should say, this little chick, has a crush on another little chick by the name of Pia. And one day, Pete and Piper and Pucker and all the other penguins, they get these beautiful orange swim trunks, the ones with the iceberg on them. And he'd love to have a pair, but the Aunt A-Mart doesn't carry Pomeroy's size. So it comes down to Mom saving the day first. She ends up getting him a pair regardless and sews in a little piece of rubber. And he's so proud that he finally gets to wear them. And then, you know, above all else, of course, he wants these because he's heard Pia say that she loves those swim trunks. So, you know, she pushes his chest out real proud because he's heard Pucker say that the birds love that. So he just tries it with Pia and tries to cannonball and impress her, and things go just awfully wrong, and his pants break. They rip, and he hears Pia giggle. He hears all the other macaroni penguins just be awful, and they say, oh, well, of course this was going to happen. You're made of mac and cheese, and you're disgusting, and they're just awful. And Pia swoops in to save the day, and they waddle off, and it really is so much about having the courage to step into situations where somebody is bullied and where somebody is hurt, and having the courage to put people in their place and say, you know what, actually, I don't think that's particularly funny. And I think, unfortunately, not often does it happen that the cute girl comes in to save the day, where that should happen a lot, you know, because you have a lot of power when you're the cute girl. And that's a time where you should step in and use that power for the right reasons.
So do you think it's because as girls, when they're considered cute, they don't see themselves with power sometimes?
Potentially. I mean, it's a courage thing also. I don't know that we're necessarily always taught to be courageous. We're often taught to fit in. And when you speak out against a crowd and say that, especially, you know, that a joke isn't funny, well, you don't do that. That's not cool. That doesn't make you cool. But it's certainly in my book and in Pia's book that makes, you know, that makes you courageous. And I believe that courage is something that we should push and drive and nurture. And I read at UBC preschool the other day, and, you know, we tried this story on the kids, and they completely got it. It was amazing how it just resonated with 3 to 4 year olds, even, you know. But I've read the story to a bunch of adults. I've elicited some tears. It turns out there's a lot of people with a bully story or two, whether on the bully side or on the bullied side. It's something that's touched most of our lives.
So very
important to me.
No, very much so, especially with Pink Shirt Day and everything. I think just bullying, it's been a hot button for a long time. But like you said, weight bullying isn't something that's been brought up, and really trying to encourage people to just say it's not cool and stand up. So
And we have all the colored shirt days. So we have the pink shirt day. I think that's remarkable that we have that. In the States, there's also a blue shirt day, I believe, in October, but don't quote me on that. but it would be incredible to have more tools that we can carry past that one day.
Yes.
And into sort of a daily conversation, especially if it can be a bedtime story, you know, where we just train ourselves, train our little kids to look out and have some awareness around how we should treat each other. Which brings us back to gentle. Gentle seems to be my word of the day.
I guess the big thing is that you can be strong and gentle at the same time.
At the same time, absolutely. And, and you know, often strength is what makes you gentle. Because it makes you sincere.
No, that's interesting. So, yeah, my name actually, it means one who is strong. So, so it's interesting.
Well, we'll give you gentle and sincere as well.
I like that. I can live with that. So okay. I think that sounds
good.
We'll take it. So in regards to your campaign, you've raised $14,000 already, but yours is a
mine is
do
an
or
all or
die.
Nothing. Yes.
So you need to raise another $6,000. So usually with Indiegogo campaigns, usually there's the perks. So I'm assuming the perk is a book.
Yes. Oh, how did you know? Yes.
I don't know.
Clever on your end. No, absolutely. Yes. For $25, you get a book.
Okay.
It'll be a hardcover book made in Canada. That was really important to us as well. We did the same thing for the first one. You'll also be funding Rebecca's second year in university. Because we're sending her to art school right now. I mean, she'd be going even without us, but she'd probably be bagging groceries for making tuition. So this way she gets to work through the summer on the second book. So we're really hoping that this is going to happen. Much rides on it, especially Rebecca's education. But, you know, we have to bring this one home. It's so, so dear to my heart. We've got 10 days left to do it. And we've got some cool perks. I mean, we've sold 7 characters in the book so far. So that's the highest perk. For $500, you can own your own character in our book, which is an Antarctic character that you get to name. You'll get 6 books with that, as well as an original piece of art of that character that you can then frame and have forever. And that's a pretty cute thing to give to somebody you love. So there's been a bunch of those purchased, but there's also library packages for $2 where you can get it for school libraries. And you get the school named in the book, which is a good cool little idea for businesses also. We've had a couple of takers on those packages because we give you a shout out on the copyright page. So if you ever wanted your name in a book, if only on the copyrights page, this is the way to go. So yeah, there's cool perks. Have a look. Check it out. Help us make this happen.
And where do people go to check this out? Like, do you have your own website where it's on there, or is it on the Indiegogo site?
On the Indiegogo site for sure, but you can find me on Facebook, Lynn Yvonne Sky, LynnyVonSky. I've been plugging it way too much. I'm almost exhausted. but you can find it there, or just go to Indiegogo, type in Pom Pom, and it's the first campaign that comes up. And if there's a little penguin in the picture in little orange swim trunks, you're on the right page.
So what's next for you after this campaign?
Ideally. Well, we're going to have it complete. We're going to have raised the $20,000 by April 12th, which is 3 days after my 32nd birthday. And we'll get illustrating right away. Rebecca is in her last week of school, and I'll have her all summer, and we'll sit down with our I do the creative direction. We've got a book designer, and we'll start illustrating so that we can get this into print by the end of the summer, so people can have their copies hopefully just in time for Christmas. So that'll happen. And then also I have my next book in my head. It's called Sadly the Owl, and it's about depression. So I'll be on to that.
That's fantastic. Any recommendations for anybody who wants to just go after their dreams besides just jump?
Just jump. There might be a rock. Who cares? It'll be worth it. You'll never say, I wish I hadn't jumped. Do it. You may fail miserably. You're going to have to convince yourself every single day that it's worth it. But if you fail doing what you love, you can never say you didn't try. It's that classic, what everybody says. But I mean, I can't help but do what I do. And there's nothing more beautiful than seeing your own dreams fly, regardless of how little they might be, because they're usually your whole universe. So it's incredibly rewarding. And if at the end of that self-doubting conversation, you arrive at this, but in the end, I don't have a choice. I just can't help it. I need to do this. Then it's what you need to do.
I think that sounds fantastic. Lenny, best of luck for your campaign. And everybody, check out Lenny Von Sky and check out Indiegogo, Pom Pom, and buy a book. Buy a character.
Hey, it's UBC. Have you seen the cards in the garage?
And it'd be a great Mother's Day gift for somebody that's something that you want to do. For those ones, are you going to be doing certificates so people can give that so they know that they're doing it in advance if they're going to try and do that for Mother's Day?
Oh, absolutely. I'll happily, it's Indiegogo. It's about making your dreams come true. You'll be my investor. So I'll do pretty much whatever you need me to do.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Up next is Hans von Claus's Misery Hour. He is an incredibly sexy man to be miserable with. He will be guiding you through the wee hours with his awesome music and that beautiful, sexy, sexy voice. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be back next week at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock. Have a beautiful night, everybody. Love, enjoy, and be passionate about everything in life. Mwah.